Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering Kingston City Council's response to Via Rail's planned changes to train service in the city.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Via Rail, get your act together.
That was Councillor Brandon Tozzo at Tuesday night's City Council meeting following an eventful few weeks for rail travel in southeastern Ontario. In September, to accommodate the launch of a new nonstop express train between Toronto and Montreal, Via Rail announced it would be reducing the number of trains stopping in Kingston and other municipalities along the corridor. However, the company postponed the planned service reduction shortly after the announcement. This all comes after changes announced in March to Via Rail's earlier high-frequency rail proposal, which originally included establishing Kingston as a regional hub. These changes were also formally opposed by council. Mayor Brian Patterson brought a motion to council on Tuesday night aimed at not only securing Kingston's current level of rail service, but also improving it. The motion includes three key requests to Via Rail. The first two are that Via Rail commit to maintaining existing passenger rail service levels in Kingston and commit to a forward-thinking plan for enhanced passenger rail service in Kingston, including upgrades to the existing station and predictable, improved service into and out of Kingston. Mayor Patterson elaborated on the reasoning behind the motion.
The purpose of this motion is twofold. Number one, I think it's important that we continue to work to preserve the level of service we have. And so to be clear, Via has made it as intending to still move ahead with these changes, just not at this point. So I don't think that we can shrink back and be complacent about this. But the second piece is that even with the status quo, I don't think that we should be satisfied with that status quo. And I think we've had those discussions around this table. I've heard many of you talk with the same passion and sometimes frustration that I have on this issue, because I see so much potential for what rail service could be to and from Kingston. I feel like there's a failure of imagination, a failure of an ambitious vision for rail service that I think would very much have the potential to transform a lot of travel through Eastern Ontario.
The motion is topped off with an action item, a request to investigate adding a late night train from Toronto.
I think if we're talking about where we can improve service, let's start with a very tangible, practical example. I hear all of the time from people in this community about how they would love to take a train to Toronto to see a Jays game or a Leafs game or a show or even good dinner or even a late meeting, and you simply cannot do that. The last train that departs back for Kingston, you have to be at the station by about 6 p.m. or shortly after. So one of the things that I think that there is tremendous opportunity for is a late evening train back from Toronto. So here's a great opportunity where we can grow Via's ridership, we can improve train travel. And so what we've agreed is that we will do our part in surveying the community and trying to get input about those who would be interested in a late evening train.
Councillor Don Amos, who seconded the motion, didn't hold back his frustration with Via Rail's recent decisions.
At the end of the day, Via needs to really evaluate their business model, because if you look at your fourth largest station and you decide to not provide more service there, how badly do they really want to be in the customer service business and moving people across the country?
The motion received unanimous support from council, and so did the feeling of confusion and exasperation over the company's shifting plans.
Like, what is Via Rail thinking? I have no idea tomorrow. Like, I'm going to just open up the news and just be like, what is Via Rail doing? Are they just bypassing Kingston? Are they shutting down service and going bankrupt? I think the chaos that this has brought onto the community cannot be understated, because people don't know what services we're going to get a week from now, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. Imagine what rail service could be in Eastern Ontario. We're living between three large cities, and it is becoming incredibly inefficient to take rail service. You know, I've had my frustrations in the past with Via Rail. I cannot think of more of a time where I am more confused by the message an organization is setting out from a communications perspective to the community and to Eastern Ontario. I'm sorry I sound infuriated. This is one of those times where I'm actually really mad at a Crown Corporation, not the first time, but where I'm just like I have no prediction of what's going on in the future.
A copy of the motion has also been sent to other municipalities that will be impacted by service reductions along the Montreal-Toronto corridor, including Port Hope, Cobourg, Belleville, Napanee, Gananoque, Brockville, and Cornwall.
We do need allies in this, but I think that if we can join forces and have a collective voice on this issue, then we can finally shift the conversation from cutting service to where we could actually add and improve service.
Councillor Connie Glenn added she would be bringing the motion forward to the Ontario caucus to get other municipalities involved. For now, Kingston's rail future remains on the tracks, but uncertain, as council, commuters, and neighboring municipalities wait to see what Via Rail's long-term plans have in store. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the Gananoque Affordable Housing Working Group's presentation to council.
Thank you, Jesse. The town of Gananoque's Affordable Housing Working Group has presented its 2025 housing strategy to council, outlining a series of recommendations to address growing concerns over affordability and availability of housing in the community. The working group that was formed in May 2024 following a motion from Deputy Mayor Vicky Leakey was entrusted with developing an action plan to guide council's decisions around affordable and rent-geared-to-income housing. The group's findings, presented this week, highlight affordability and availability as the two most pressing housing issues facing local residents. According to a housing survey conducted last September, 69% of respondents identified affordability and availability as top concerns. Of the 182 residents who took part, 37% reported a gross household income under $30,000. Nearly half of respondents rent their homes, with many spending upwards of $1,700 a month on rent, while 12% indicated they were in temporary housing, staying with friends, or homeless. The report notes that Gananoque's older adult population is rising sharply, with over 400 more residents aged 55 and older expected in 2031, underscoring the need for more accessible and affordable housing options for seniors. At the same time, the town's reliance on seasonal industries such as accommodations and food services places additional strain on lower-income residents. To tackle these challenges, the working group is recommending that council identify underutilized or vacant municipal lots that could be offered for affordable housing development. There were a number of other proposed measures, including the creation of a dedicated affordable housing webpage, the creation of a new community involvement plan focused on affordable housing, and improving communication to residents about local homelessness and housing supports in public spaces across town. The group also emphasized the importance of coordination with the United Counties of Leeds and Grenville, which serves as the regional service manager for housing. As Gananoque's population ages and housing costs rise, the report stresses that proactive planning is essential to maintain the town's social and economic vitality. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGR reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, with an update on the status of the KFLNA Big Brothers Big Sisters services.
Thank you, Dinah. At the end of October, Big Brothers Big Sisters Canada will be ceasing operations in Kingston, Lennox, Frontenac, and Addington after more than 50 years of service in the area. But the organization says the region won't be left without mentoring services. After an email sent from BBBS last Friday was circulated on Kingston-based Reddit and Facebook pages, community members began mourning the loss and wondering what the impact of losing such a long-standing program will be. Later that weekend, after the post that had been shared garnered hundreds of comments, BBBS KBSKFLNA posted in the Facebook group to provide some clarification on the situation, saying the initial post shared was lacking in detail. In short, the organization says the ceasing of operations does not spell the end of mentor/mentee programs in the area, with the Boys and Girls Club stepping in to fill the gap. BBBS say they're working with a number of providers to try to transition programs to remain active in the area, noting that another organization is ready to kick off its own mentor-mentee program in response to the closure. Representatives for the local Boys and Girls Club and Big Brothers Big Sisters did not provide comment and said that they are waiting on further direction from BBBS Canada.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Now over to the LGA reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story covering the possible creation of 50 new childcare slots in Prince Edward County and Lennox and Addington.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Prince Edward, Lennox, and Addington Social Services are still looking to create 49 childcare spaces by December 31st, 2026, as part of their expansion under the Canada-wide Early Learning and Childcare System. The group is looking to find an operator who can expand or open new childcare spaces in the area. The group are looking for applications before October 31st. The Canada-wide Early Learning and Childcare System gives families access to more affordable and high-quality childcare options, helps lower childcare fees for parents and guardians of children under the age of 6, increases childcare spaces, supports the childcare workforce, and supports inclusive childcare. As of March this year, the system has created about 39,500 new affordable childcare spaces. This goes towards their goal of creating 86,000 spaces by the end of 2026. As of January 1st this year, the system capped fees at $22 per day, bringing the provincial average to $19 per day. By March 2026, the system is looking to lower that average to $10 per day. Families and individuals may be eligible for reduced fees if their licensed childcare provider is enrolled in the system and charges more than $12 per day for childcare, with the child being under the age of 6 or turns 6 years old and is enrolled in a licensed preschool, kindergarten, or family age group or a licensed home childcare premises until June 30th. Costs can depend on a family's income and can be reduced by 50% for eligible children in system-enrolled programs. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Dan Jones, with a story about a significant funding boost for hospice care in Northumberland County.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Coburg, Ontario. It was a remarkable fundraiser for hospice care in Northumberland County, as Ed's House raised over $70,000 for hospice-related programs. A few hundred people and some dogs walked, ran, or biked selected routes in Coburg on September 28th. Community Care Northumberland Executive Director Trish Baird spoke with me about the fundraising efforts.
Oh, it's just we're thrilled with the response from the people that were there and the donors that provided fundraising for it. $71,000 raised in, well, it's a lot of work. And so we were excited and happy that it was so successful.
Now, you had 220 participants, rather, and 60 dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a lot of pooping and scooping, but that's a lot of participants. I mean, that seems like it was a very good event.
Yeah, and really, there's probably, that's probably low numbers as far as maybe they weren't there walking, but we had people out walking all over the place, all over the world. We had pictures come in from Switzerland, from France, of people with their Hike, Bike, Bark shirts on, so it was great. And the dogs, that was a record number of dogs, and honestly, it was pretty calm there at Victoria Park.
Now, were you surprised at the worldwide engagement, or did you know that going in?
Well, I think we knew some of our volunteers and staff were on vacation that really wanted to participate, but dates collided, so they received their sponsors and fundraisers and still made sure everybody knew that they were hiking for the cause. So that was great.
Now, you had some pretty serious individuals there. Selena Forsyth. The top individual fundraiser, $10,650, an HG for hospice team. The top team at $7,325. I mean, what's that say to you when you have that level of engagement by one or two groups?
Yeah, you know, and we every year there seems to be a different team coming out that have been impacted by hospice services in some way. It might have been somebody, a family member that was staying at the residence, or a family member that was being looked after at home by our community team. And the impact they have, and because all of our services at hospice part of our organization are free of charge, people want to do kind of what they can to help support us and get the word out about hospice, because so many people think of it in a negative term, and we really encourage our fundraisers and our donors to talk about the positive experiences they've had at the end of life of their loved one. And this is one way where it's a wonderful day. There's lots of laughs and there's lots of great stories and joining in. But there's also, you know, the serious part of why we're here and why we're raising that money. So those teams, they really get behind the cause. And Selena has, as an individual, she's been on our top leaderboard for many years. She's a longtime hospice volunteer, longtime community care board member, and this has always been her dream to have a hospice residence in this area of the county. So she always cajoles her friends and family far and wide to support her in her walk. So she came and walked 2 kilometers, and I don't know if you know Selena, but that was a great feat for her to be able to do that on that day.
No, that's amazing and wonderful that you have such passionate individuals in the community, mm-hmm. really driving fundraising and ensuring that there is hospice care. Now, segueing into my next question, obviously some of the programs that this money will help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, hospice services, it's free of charge. And we have a great community team that are out in people's homes, helping people at the end of their life. And they sometimes, people don't know so much about the community team. So it'll help with our, when you've first been diagnosed with a life-limiting illness, you can call our team and meet with somebody to help you kind of navigate that journey. What's it going to look like? What's available? How can I stay in my home? What if I want to go somewhere else at the end of my life? Or I might be, you know, it doesn't mean you might be around for many, many years, but this way you can connect with somebody. It's a phone call away, or they can be visiting with you in your home. And then if, you know, you're towards the end of your life, you end up being transitioned into our residence at Ed's house, it can support you while you're there. We have some wonderful grief and bereavement programs to help family and friends. So this money goes to help support all of that, because we are funded partially by the Ontario government through Ontario Health at Home, but that's only about 60% of our funding, 50 to 60. And so this helps with that other gap so that we can be able to provide these services in the community and at Ed's house.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We start with Thursday, October 16th, a cool 13 degrees here in the city of Kingston, feeling closer to 11, dropping down to 4 overnight. About the same daytime high on Friday, October 17th, but it'll feel a little bit warmer. Real feel closer to about 16 degrees, dropping down to 10 overnight. Saturday, October 18th, the day of the Queen's homecoming football game. Daytime high of 16 degrees. It'll be cloudy with a 25% chance of precipitation, only dropping down to 13 overnight. Sunday, October 19th, daytime high of 19 degrees with a 83% chance of rain throughout the region, dropping down to 10 overnight, and then moving into the start of next week, Monday, October 20th, daytime high of 14, feeling closer to 10, 60% chance of rain, dropping down to 8 degrees overnight.
This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging.
Albert Street, Princess to Mac, is closed to accommodate construction activity at 484 Albert. Berry Street, Queen to Colborn, is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Berry Street, King Street West to Stewart, is closed October 14th to 18th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. to accommodate ongoing construction projects. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation. Johnson Street at Victoria, closed until October 24th for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. Kings Court Ave, concession to First Ave, closed October 10th to November 21st for gas main installation. Queen Street, Wellington, and King, westbound lanes will be closed October 14th to 17th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. for the installation of new services. Tivoli Avenue, closed at Midland and Sierra until October 17th for the installation of new services. Wellington Street, Queen to Berwick, is closed October 14th to 17th from 7 to 7 for the installation of new services. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Ave, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and some road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.